Yankees Files Podcast, we are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are listening to the last Yankees Files Podcast before the 2023 regular season starts, barring crazy circumstances. Whipple, spring training is winding down. The Yankees will head back to New York in a few days to get ready to open up the season against the San Francisco Giants, who will not, interestingly, be featuring Aaron Judge or Carlos Correa. And there's still a lot that I think is unresolved, and we're going to do our best to resolve it for people on this episode. We're going to talk World Baseball Classic. We're going to talk roster. We're going to talk our predictions for this season. I haven't told you this yet, but I'm going to make you do some over-unders. And we're just going to have a good time with it. I know you probably have an update on how arduous and taxing law school has been, but I'll throw it to you for whatever you got right now.
Yeah, I'm excited for the new season. I will not talk about law school, contrary to belief, but I have to, you know, chime in about my WBC experience. I think
please do.
In general, this was definitely such a great tournament for baseball. I think the way it ended and the way those final few games went were just, you know, something out of a movie. And I definitely, after the Edwin Diaz injury, with a lot of backlash that specific people were giving to the WBC for unnecessary injuries, I think it was awesome how everyone unified around it and just, you know, a great ending to the tournament. I was in Arizona for pool play, and it was really cool. I mean, I gotta say, like, I have not seen baseball in that capacity before, and by in that capacity I mean with the national pride and the more Olympics or World Cup style element versus just, you know, MLB games. And I think going in I was excited, but getting there, the first game was Mexico-Colombia, and did not expect the level of energy and intensity that the fans were bringing. And I mean, shout out to Team Mexico and its fans. That was 99% of the energy in that pool. They were awesome. It sounded more like a soccer game. Their horns, cheering, Randy Rosarena cheers, which, you know, usually I'll condone, but here I definitely appreciated. And just a great, great environment, some great games that occurred. I saw Mexico thrash the United States, and I saw the U.S. come back and probably put on the most dominant inning of baseball I've ever seen, that first inning against Canada.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was mechanical. It was like, you knew going in, this guy who was facing them was 19 years old, and so you expected it to be, you know, a pretty high-scoring affair early on. But just hit after hit, home run, you know, I think there was one out recorded before Mookie Betts came back to the plate. And that was a sacrifice fly. And then Mike Trout hit a three-run home run. I mean, Team USA's lineup was scary. And Team Mexico's lineup was put them right in it. So, you know, it was really fun watching the back and forth and seeing who was going to advance. So, I mean, everyone watched the games, I'm sure. I'm not going to go specifically into them. But I just thought it was such a great event to really get that national pride and that tournament aspect of baseball that we see in the postseason, but not really in that format. I think in the postseason, we're so used to, you know, you're at Yankee Stadium, it's Yankees fans. You're at, Fenway with Red Sox fans. Here it was like you had competing fan bases, and every single game, I mean, in the morning, you had Mexico fans flooding the place. The afternoon, the U.S. fans flooded the place. Like, it was so cool to see each fan base going back and forth in a very enjoyable, respectful manner. I think the 2026 WBC is going to benefit a lot from what this tournament was able to do. And highlight of the tournament was definitely seeing Kyle Higashioka come in and catch in the seventh inning mercy rule of the U.S.-Canada game. I was like, I can leave after this. This was all I came to see. So, I saw my share of New York Yankees and saw some really awesome, exciting, and passionate baseball.
That's great. It seems like you had a great time. It must have been, yeah, definitely a different environment, a cool environment in which to watch some baseball. You saw the U.S. yeah, really dominate. Shout out to Mitch Bratt. First of all, just like, it was probably tough growing up being named Mitch Bratt, but it was probably a lot tougher as a 19-year-old facing that U.S. lineup. Major League pitching has enough trouble with Mookie Betts and Mike Trout and Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt and Trey Turner and all those guys. So for this guy to go out there, look, he got shelled, but like, what do you expect? He has 23 games of professional baseball experience. Like,
And one other thing, you know, we saw definitely some guys who should not have been pitching in those situations. I think sure. there was the Canada Great Britain game. Canada mercy ruled Great Britain 18-8. So it's a lot of high scoring affairs.
Wait, but, did like, you see cool Vance Worley?
Yes, Vance Worley actually held his own. Like, did a really good job against a tough U.S. lineup. I think it was the best pitching performance by another team against that. Maybe the Mexico did better. But still, Vance Worley hasn't pitched competitively in, like, years.
Okay, you might have looked this up because you saw him. How old do you think Vance Worley is?
He's not, like, that old, right?
He's surprisingly like, only 35.
Yeah, I was going to say 36. So.
Yeah, he pitched his last game in the majors, like, 5.5 years ago as... basically having just turned 30. Mm-hmm. I would have told you that Vance Worley was like 45, but he debuted pretty young and actually later than I remembered.
Yeah. We saw a few ex-Yankees that I made sure to shout out. We saw Gio Urshela lead Team Colombia to the only Team Mexico loss of the pool. And Gio made a few great plays at third base. I think
as is his way.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, Josh Donaldson was, a much better choice to replace Owen. we saw Luis Sessa pitch for Team Mexico in some important moments. Gio Gallegos did not close out the Mexico win against Japan, but he had some really great innings against Team Colombia. We saw Adam Ottavino for Team USA. We saw Indigo Diaz, who was the return in the Lucas Leckie trade, pitch some innings for Canada. I mean, yeah, obviously. So we did see some other Yankees other than Higashioka. I'm trying to remember. I think that was all of them. Just a lot of great players there in general. But, you know, shout out to Sessa, Gallegos, Gio. I mean, we all love Gio.
We do. It's hard not to, especially given what a happy fella he is. All right, Whipple. World Baseball Classic, definitely cool, definitely good for the game. I mean, it ending with a Trout Ohtani at bat was just pretty crazy. I have to say, it would be nice if more U.S. pitchers would play. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't have changed the fact that they couldn't score against Japan in that last game, but... like, Merrill Kelly should not, with all due respect, however much that is to Merrill Kelly, like, he shouldn't be starting the World Baseball Classic Championship if we want people to embrace this as a tournament that matters. Like, it's certainly entertaining, but the question I think that I've come away with from the World Baseball Classic is this something that... like, what do we want this to be? Do we want this to be a thing that fans really care about their preferred team winning? Or do we just want it to be a thing that makes baseball really visible? Because if it's the former, we're going to need MLB to more actively support players going, and we're going to need them to limit the extent to which teams can veto a player's participation. Because, like, look, the U.S. had a roster of very good position players, but the pitching staff was kind of a shame given the people who weren't on it. And if we want this to be a thing where we care about the competition and not just the spectacle, that is going to need to change. On top of that, any of you who think that contact is the ultimate virtue should watch what the U.S. team did when they had runners on base in that final game against Japan, because they sure as hell didn't strike out much, but I can tell you they also didn't slug, and that's the reason they didn't get runs in. They went 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position, and they put 5 balls in play in those at-bats. They went 3-for-16 with a walk and 2 ground into double plays with runners on base last that game. and only 5 of the 13 outs they made with runners on base were strikeouts. So they put the ball in play with runners on base 11 times, 8 times for outs, and got nothing for it. Because it's not about making contact. It's about slugging. We keep seeing examples over and over again, and people still tried to fight me on this, but I'm going to make that point whenever I can because apparently people still don't get it. The only thing you should care about is getting extra base hits. I'll say it again.
Yeah, I'll let you, you know, continue your war on contact and slugging island. But in response to the first point, not that I don't agree with it, I'm just, you know, I clear out for you on that one. Definitely a terrible pitching staff. I mean, Lance Lynn was the best pitcher and he pitched well, but you know, those other guys should not have been starting in a national team setting. I do wonder, you know, if you had the original rotation that I think we thought we were going to get of Clayton Kershaw, Nestor Cortez, Logan Webb, I think Nathan Eovaldi was even considering or committed at one point. If they were pitching, you know, that's not the U.S.'s best, but I think that's a lot more representative. And obviously insurance issues and injury issues, we don't know, you know, what extent the team's veto played into that with Nestor, played a factor. But I think, you know, you hear guys like Max Scherzer basically say, like, you know, this the timing of it, of this tournament doesn't allow for this competitive it doesn't allow for pitchers to go and, you know, pitch at a high level in a game situation.
Well, he's going
to
say that about any time. That's right. The thing. Like, that's the most convenient excuse. If it's right before the season, oh, well, I'm not ramped up yet. If it's right after the season, oh, well, I just threw 200 innings. If it's in January, oh, well, you know, this is the time where I rest my arm. Like, it's such a joke. You can be honest about the fact that you don't want to play in it, and that's fine. My question is just, you know, it revolves around the idea that the World Baseball Classic, especially this iteration of it, did a great job of getting eyes on the World Baseball Classic and getting people to just watch interesting baseball games. I think there's a question, as we think about the future of it, of how are we supposed to respond to it? How are we supposed to conceive of it? Is the World Baseball Classic a thing where we care about who wins, or is it just a thing where interesting moments will happen? And maybe that's not important. And if people are watching it, people are watching it, and that's all that matters. But I, as much as like the individual moments of Trey Turner going yard a bunch of times, or you know the Trout Ohtani at bat, or the Japan walk off in the semifinal were cool on their own, I think I'm just not getting that last step of like, okay, so like what is the World Baseball Classic? What does it mean to win it, and how does that relate to me watching
it? I think the answer for that is different for a lot of the other countries in Team US. And I mean, I got that sense there, and you could get that sense based on fan reaction. And that's, again, not a bad thing. I think that I think that for the other countries, like, there is a lot of national pride that I just don't think we have here for whatever reason. And you know, that's going to have to be taken into account going forward and when building the next team roster. I do hope that MLB does support it. I do think that this tournament in particular will do a lot going forward. Like, I think there will be a lot more incentive or just a desire for U.S. baseball players to participate because the other countries aren't really having those problems. And your question is why? I do hope that the way this tournament unfolded, the positive reactions just in general by the players, I really hope that's a big factor in the 2026 WBC. We won't probably know for 3 years, but this does feel different than, you know, everyone's reactions coming away from 2017 or 2013. Like, this feels more than just like, okay, it's over, we're moving on. I think it was a real center of conversation in even the national discourse. Like, I mean, I know it wasn't about baseball per se, but I saw, you know, clips of the fact that the Cuban player defected, like, that was on CNN. I know that's not the game, but like, that is the WBC. People were talking about it to me that are not really baseball fans. I think I take note of that stuff because, you know, it's baseball. Like, that doesn't happen that much. So I guess, you know, we'll see how it unfolds.
Yeah, there's no doubt that they did a good job of getting eyes on the sport. And that, I think, is like a good in and of itself. I'm interested to see how the messaging or, you know, presentation changes moving forward. Whipple, I think we're going to get into our predictions for this season or our season preview. And we're going to use the same format we did last year. We're going to give out some preseason awards. We're going to project some leaders in individual stat categories, and we're going to make some bold predictions. But I think the responsible thing for us to do before we do any of that is we should probably give some thoughts on who is going to be on this team. So let's talk roster. I think we're clearly seeing a lot of roster discourse. You pointed out on Twitter today that you spend an awful lot of time and energy concerned with Anthony Volpe's spring training at bats, given how consequential they're perceived to be. And he is one of the main roster questions. He's not the only one, but let's just go through. We'll talk about position players. We'll talk about pitchers. And let's give a point of view on who we think is going to be, you know, playing a meaningful amount for this team. I'll go through what I have here. You can tell me where you agree and disagree. Despite the catcher injuries we saw during the spring, I think it's pretty clear the only guys that are going to see meaningful time behind the plate are Trevi and Kyle Higashioka.
So you're telling me that I'm just we don't have time for that.
Yeah. Let's move to the infield. Actually, let's not. let's go through some more sure things first. Giancarlo Stanton will get the majority of plate appearances at designated hitter. Agree or disagree?
I feel like there is a lot with this. It's a very interesting team because I think one move could switch a lot of positions. I mean,
definitely.
There is a world in which if they do feel comfortable using Judge in left field, you could to get, I mean, it kind of jumping ahead. I think Stanton could split time between designated hitter and right field if you're really, I know that goes against like their, you know, how they would use him, but
I want to believe this.
I want to believe it too. I think we're safe in saying he is a sure thing for a lineup spot. And I think the question is, you know, how much might come in the outfield, but you know, it could, based on the moves that are made elsewhere, I could see him getting more time than we think in the outfield. It seems like there is a bit more movement for that early on than usual. And I think there's a lot more movement based on like who needs to be playing than we've ever had. So
sure.
Yeah. Sorry. I know that was not the question asked.
No, but it's a fair point. And I think you're right. The way to frame this is probably like, let's start with the guys who are pretty confident are going to get 600 plate appearances. And then let's talk about right. Where the rest of them go.
Okay.
So we have Trevino and Higashioka. Neither of them is going to get 600 plate appearances, but they'll combine to get basically every plate appearance from the catcher spot. We have Giancarlo Stanton, who we expect to be in the lineup every day. We have Anthony Rizzo. I expect Anthony Rizzo will be in the lineup every day. I don't, you know, the infield dynamics go a lot of ways. I don't really see Rizzo getting left out of them.
I think he's probably the non-catcher who will play most at like a given position that mm-hmm. we can be reasonably sure of.
Yeah, right. I think that's probably true. Aaron Judge. I think Aaron Judge's playing time is pretty safe.
Yeah, I would say so.
You think as the returning MVP, they're going to give him a little run, give him a long leash?
Well, captain MVP deal, you know, maybe in like April, you know, they'll reevaluate.
Yeah, no, that would be responsible. You can't just let him, you know, sit out there like there's no threat to him, of course.
Right,
but it's ridiculous. Okay, so we've covered the catchers. We covered Stanton, Rizzo, Judge. I think almost everything else from a position player perspective is kind of in question, at least with respect to where this guy's plate appearances will come, like where this guy's going to play in the field to get his plate appearances or how many he'll get.
Yeah, I think
guy with the next safest quantity number of plate appearances is DJ.
Yeah, one other thing, I would say Harrison Bader would have been a sure lock for a position, and you know, when he comes back. But
his absence actually is one of the things that really complicates how the distribution of playing time could play out.
And for DJ, yeah, I think he might be limited based on injury prevention management, but as long as he's able, you know, there's never going to be a situation which a healthy DJ LeMahieu will be sitting on the bench if it's not for, like, load management.
Yeah, totally agree. So let's now, I think we have to kind of go position by position. When the regular season ends, who will have the most starts at second base?
Gleyber Torres.
I agree. I completely agree.
I hope.
I think you're right. This is going to tie into some stuff that I'm going to say later, so I don't want to spoil it all now, but
I think the Yankees trade him now, I think that is one of the stupidest things they've ever done.
I agree. I could not agree more. Who will get the majority of plate appearances, or who will, there may not be a majority. I think this is the position where there's least likely to be a majority, potentially, or at least the infield spot where there's least likely to be a majority. Who will get the most starts at shortstop?
Oswald Peraza.
Again, I agree. Who will get the most starts at third base?
Anthony Volpe.
Whoa. I'm gonna need you to elaborate on that one.
So, in just thinking about how this is going to work, in my ideal infield, which involves Gleyber Torres, Oswald Peraza, and Anthony Volpe, I feel like that's the only way it could work. And I still feel like the most likely outcome here is Josh Donaldson starting with the team and Volpe maybe not starting with the team. But even if he does start with the team, I do feel like a Peraza-Volpe infield is something that they're going to be highly incentivized to figure out how it would work. And while that could involve them playing at second and short, I think it's in their best interest, and they've done it a little bit, to maybe start working out one of them at third base. And given their defensive capabilities, I feel like it probably should be Volpe. And that's probably making like five assumptions, and I feel like that is also risky. But I really don't think Gleyber Torres should or will be traded.
Agree.
So maybe if you are able to play Stanton in the field, you know, you can play your Peraza, Volpe, middle infield, and then DH Gleyber. Anointing Volpe your shortstop of the future is essentially, like, if you start Volpe opening day, that's basically saying Peraza isn't going to play shortstop. And he's the better defender, and he should have a role on this team. So I feel like that's not what should be done.
Yeah, so...
Does that all make sense? I mean, I know it's a stretch, but...
So the... What I'm struggling with about this take is Volpe has three professional starts at third base. They all came in 2021. He, in 2022, didn't play a single game away from shortstop. Now, I don't think, unless the Yankees have, like, are actively engaged in conversations about a Peraza trade, I don't think it's responsible for Anthony Volpe to be the shortstop basically at all. He's certainly not a better shortstop than Peraza is defensively. I just don't know if third base is where he's going to get the time. That's my only concern. And I don't... The thing is, they've been, like, really committed to playing him at shortstop. Like,
I know
the natural thing to assume is, oh well, you'd put him at second, but they really like LeMahieu at second. They really like Gleyber at second, I think, and he only has 18 professional innings at second base. So, like, it's really tough, man. And I'm open to him playing third base. I think it makes sense. I think he could handle it. I think people, you know, are talking about his body profiling him for a move away from shortstop at some point. That doesn't mean that move has to be immediate, but, and I said this on Twitter earlier, like, of the two shortstop prospects, Peraza is the meaningfully better defender. And he would not need to develop as much offensively to be a valuable shortstop in Major League Baseball as he would to be a valuable third baseman. Like, if the thought is one of them is moving to third, then it should be Volpe, because he has the more projectable offense and he's not as good defensively. So it makes all the sense in the world. The question is just, are they willing to do that? Right. And then there's also the question of, like, and I hate to present, like, what if the Yankees succeed as a bad outcome, but, like, what if Josh Donaldson doesn't suck this year?
Right.
Like, then what do you do? I think third base is the place that I am most, like, confused by, because earlier in the offseason, I thought you just give DJ LeMahieu all those plate appearances. But now, as it seems like Volpe's ETA is really like March 30th or April 15th and not July 30th, that becomes an even bigger question. And then, you know, especially if Donaldson is playing well, you have Volpe, Glaber, Peraza, Rizzo, DJ, Donaldson, and potentially Oswaldo Cabrera, for whom you're trying to find infield playing time. And I don't know what you do about that. You have to move guys. I didn't even mention IKF. It's insane. I don't know how you manage it. I'd be surprised, I think, if the person who gets the most starts at third base is not Josh Donaldson or DJ LeMahieu. But gosh, I don't know, man.
I think the way I was thinking about it is, you know, where is it going to go by the end of the regular season?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if it's not DJ LeMahieu or Volpe, but, like, I don't know. That's the thing. Like, I've
really
never
hard.
Been this confused. I don't think you, I think we did this last year and it was like, you know, player X
so
goes
obvious.
To one, you know, Y goes to two. This is like insane. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I'm sure the Yankees feel the same way. I don't think they've ever waited this long to really finalize so many different things. I mean, for all we know, you know, there could be trades coming that clarify this, but we've said that for 4 months, right? Like,
yeah.
Same conversation we were having in November.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to me that Peraza will be the primary shortstop and Glaber will be the primary second baseman.
Yep.
And then you have to find at bats for Volpe. But, like, now we're hearing that the Yankees might, you know, there's a lot of voices pushing for Volpe. So that's the biggest question. If Volpe is starting at shortstop, if that actually happens, what do you do with Peraza? And is that, you know, are you willing to carry one of them on the bench and, you know, not be a full-time player, or are you just going to send him to AAA?
And result is you're going to send one of them to AAA, you're going to start Oswald Peraza in the ALCS at shortstop,
right?
After he, you know, has a pretty impressive, albeit probably unsustainable, offensive and defensive run with you in a pennant race. And then you're going to start him in AAA the next year,
right?
And replace him with a guy who has 99 plate appearances ever above AA.
So, yeah, and what about the scenario if Volpe goes to AAA and Donaldson starts hitting? Like, what do you do then? I mean, what if Peraza struggles? Is there, you know, people are going to be calling for Volpe to replace Peraza. I mean, this
people
is
are
like
be calling
cannibalism.
For, people are going to be calling for Volpe to replace, like, Anthony Rizzo if he strikes out his first at bat. Like, we got the wrong Anthony.
It does feel different, though, you have to admit. Like, again, with the feeling, like, we have said how the Yankees operate. I've used that as, like, my Bible for analysis. And this is, it's different.
It feels like they're about to completely throw that out.
Right. And I don't know where that's coming from. It doesn't seem like a front office thing, but we might be reaching something unprecedented here where Volpe is just hitting so well. And I think the more important thing is he has a lot of support from players, from coaches, like from everyone. When have you heard Judge and even Garrett Cole, to a less extent, go on the record and basically say, like, we want the kid here?
So I really feel, and I don't want this, and I don't know who they'd be going after, But I really feel like the only solution, if you, while he's 21 years old after he lit up spring training, but like, let's face it, wasn't good in AAA, struck out like 30% of the time. Last year, he got on base in the minors as a whole at like a 340 clip or something, which is not lighting it on fire by any means. If you make that guy, Anthony Volpe, your shortstop on opening day, I think you're saying that Oswald Peraza isn't in the long-term plan for the team. And if he's not, then you need to put together a blockbuster trade where you're trading away a, what, 22-year-old shortstop with, you know, playoff experience and 6 years of control, who's a top 100 prospect. And then, like, what are you going after? Like, it's such a conundrum. Like, right. I don't even, it's a, like, it's bending my brain. I don't know what right. to think of it.
And even, you know, to counter your points about Volpe, like, I get all that, and I'm sure you feel the same way, but it's just like, you know, what the solution then is. I don't think he has to figure anything out. Maybe he has to get a little more comfortable at AAA, but there will be a point in the near future where, you know, if he doesn't start with the team, he's going to be knocking on the door. And he's been very impressive in spring training. It's just
There's no doubt about that.
Right. That conundrum is causing a wrench, you know, the size of which we have probably never seen with this team. And yeah, I mean, if one of these players was an outfielder, like, that
oh
would
my
make,
gosh, right?
And it wasn't IKF, who has yeah. now decided to do everything but manage the team, which I like give him credit for.
Yeah, like, you know what? Good for IKF.
He knows he's on the hot seat. He's like, I'm gonna do everything and anything to stay. But I don't think his bat profile's even half as well if he's now a left fielder or a center fielder.
No,
but
God no.
No, I mean, it's the fact. I mean, you know, I said Anthony Volpe, but you could see I have minimal confidence in it. And it just yeah. comes off a reasoning that, you know, these are the players I think will be in the lineup. And, you know, this is how it might happen. And DJ, you know, somebody will get hurt. That's the way this always goes. But
yep,
it's just tough. And I don't know. Like, I think the final thing, like the big thing here, the biggest problem is that all signs, all logical signs with how this team works, evaluation, prospect development, like performance last year, point to Oswald Peraza being the shortstop. And that might not happen. Yeah. And what does that mean? I mean, we obviously don't know.
I have no idea what to make of it. It's insane. And I guess we can only wait and see. Until Harrison Bader comes back, I expect that the majority of the non-judge, I think that Aaron Hicks and Oswaldo Cabrera will play almost every non-judge outfield inning until Harrison Bader comes back. Whether it's Estevan Florial, Rafael Ortega, or Willie Calhoun who makes the team, I'd be very surprised to see any of those guys getting meaningful playing time over Hicks or Cabrera at this point.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cabrera had another home run tonight. Like, he's yep. lighting it up. I mean, just nothing else you can say.
Oswaldo Cabrera rules. Like, I want
awesome.
Something. I want something to be very clear. I want this to be extremely clear. If the Yankees trade Oswaldo Cabrera, I would be furious. I don't think that's like on the table or anything because he's so versatile, so defensively valuable. He's a switch hitter who, as a rookie, had an above average offensive season, all that stuff. Oswaldo Cabrera is so freaking cool. And I used to, like early in college, like when those Cubs teams were getting good and ultimately won the World Series, I used to watch Javier Baez, who I still love. And I would just be like, man, I wish the Yankees had a player that cool. Like, Robbie Cano was almost that cool, but he was, like, too chill about it. Like, I wish the Yankees had someone that cool. And now they have Oswaldo Cabrera, and he's, like, the player that I have been waiting for. And I love him, and I'm so happy that he's just lighting up spring training. I think that a lot of people are sleeping on him, and he could have a really, really good year.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about Yankees pitcher development and what a, you know, a factory that's been, but they've gotten some hitters, Anthony Volpe being one of them, to add some legit power and really change their prospect profile. Oswaldo Cabrera
Peraza is one of them too.
also, yeah, some great success in player development, but like he is the crown jewel of like their player development on the hitting side right now.
Absolutely.
He went from nothing to, you know, starting in left field in the playoffs and now being assured of a everyday lineup spot, probably for a lot longer than we think, just given the nature of a baseball season. Like, he's going to get a full season worth of playing time. I love him. Absolutely. Like, one of, if not, yeah, one of my top players on the team. I think just watching him emerge last year was one of the best parts of 2022. And if he gets traded, that's I don't know. he won't get traded.
I don't even want to put that in the world. So, agree with that. And then that leaves us with the bench. I think for a long time, we were under the impression that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was getting traded. I'd be surprised if the Yankees aren't still trying to do that, but I think he's on the bench. And
you know what's cruel about that? Like, every day I read, like, Team X has an injury to a middle infielder. And they're like, this would be a good fit for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And nothing is going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen.
Like, it's almost crazy. Like, Mariners, Dylan Moore went down. Like, they need an infielder. How about IKF? Nope. It sucks.
It's ridiculous. So IKF is going to get one of those spots unless he gets moved, which we know he won't. And the other spot goes to like the Florial / Ortega / Calhoun guy. I will say people seem to really like Willie Calhoun. He doesn't play center field though. So, if
you know,
this
does
spot,
play center field.
Esteban Florial, Rafael Ortega, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and Oswaldo Cabrera.
Could you roll with IKF as a fourth outfielder? Like, is that something
not
that
exclusively?
Could happen? But like
if IKF sticks around as a bench piece for the entire year, I expect that he would appear in games at like at least four different positions.
Right. But, like, are you comfortable as, like, the only guy on your bench who can play outfield?
No, and I don't think they'd ever end up in that situation.
Okay.
Because in order for that to happen, so right now, the position players we have slotted into the roster are Trevino, Higashioka, Rizzo, Gleyber, Peraza, Donaldson, Judge, Hicks, Cabrera, DJ, Stanton. That leaves two spots. That's 11 of the 13. We assume that one of those spots is going to IKF. The only situation you end up in which IKF is the fourth outfielder is if that other bench spot goes to Volpe. But I don't think they're going to carry... First of all, I don't think they carry that many pure infielders. Second, we think Stanton is going to play the outfield a little bit, so maybe it would be like the fourth and a half outfielder.
Okay,
but third, I don't think that... that they're going to have Volpe and Peraza both on the roster for one of them to just rot on the bench.
Maybe they should just like put all the names in a hat.
That's a good idea.
Each game, draw who's going to play what position. Cause like other than like Rizzo and the catchers, I think they could all play anywhere.
Yeah. That feels pretty true.
Okay. I agree. Point taken.
Yeah. So that last spot is, I think, almost guaranteed to be either Flo or Ortega, just because Ortega plays center field, and I think they'll value that. My apologies to Willie Calhoun. I think the pitching staff makes a lot more sense. We just got the news from Jack Curry that Rodon is expected back in May, which is awesome. I like that they're treating him with caution. So for the first month of the season, that gives us a starting rotation of Cole, Seve, Nestor, Herman, and Clark Schmidt. And the relief staff, at least for now, looks like it'll shake out to be Holmes, Loaisiga, Peralta, King, Marinaccio, Abreu, Cordero, and either Matt Crook or Greg Weissert. I probably give the edge to Matt Crook because he's left-handed. Abreu and Cordero are both out of options, which is why they make it on opening day. You know, when Tommy Canley comes back, there'll be a discussion. Greg Weissert could certainly play his way onto this roster. Again, guys will get hurt. Guys will be ineffective. We'll see what happens. But any notes on those 13 pitchers? I think I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Greg Weissert, but this is a lot easier to play that, you know, he's out of options, put him on the roster. Like, that, it makes sense. It's easy to execute, and it preserves the most depth, I think it's pretty straightforward. And yeah, I would hope so, given the glut of infielders they're trying to sort through. I'm sure they feel the same way.
Yeah. So that leaves us with an initial opening day 26-man roster of Jose Trevino, Kyle Higashioka, Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres, Oswald Peraza, Josh Donaldson, Aaron Judge, Aaron Hicks, Oswaldo Cabrera, Estevan Floreal, or a perfect substitute for Estevan Floreal, IKF, DJ LeMahieu, Giancarlo Stanton, Garrett Cole, Luis Severino, Nestor Cortes, Domingo Herman, Clark Schmidt, Clay Holmes, Jonathan Loaisiga, Wandy Peralta, Mike King, Albert Abreu, Jimmy Cordero, Ron Marinaccio, and Matt Crook. If anyone could repeat that back to me in 2x speed, I'll like a tweet of yours or something. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. Now we get to the fun part, which is we're going to give out our preseason awards, or make our preseason predictions about who we think we'll give these awards to at the end of the year. And then we're going to make our bold predictions, which I think may be quite bold. Whipple, our award categories are MVP, Cy Young, Reliever of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, and Breakout Player of the Year. Who is your preseason MVP pick for the 2023 New York Yankees?
I mean, so to get this, I copied and pasted my, you know, the categories from last year, and I did not have to change the person here.
Yeah.
When your projections are about like a mid-40s home run average, about like a 169, 170 WRC plus average, like that's objectively insane. And Aaron Judge just brings so much more to this team than, you know, raw power, raw hitting ability. It would be malpractice to legitimately make predictions and not say that he is going to be the MVP of this team, because he was the MVP of this team and every other team. If you hadn't heard, he was the MVP of the entire league.
Do you want to hear something funny that I just love about Aaron Judge's Pecota projection?
Mm-hmm.
So in his 50th percentile projection, which one might interpret as half the time we expect him to do better than this, he is a 6.7 WAR player with a 909 OPS who hits 37 home runs and scores 100 runs and has 25 doubles. That's ridiculous.
What are his top projections? Like his 90th or 90?
You want his 99th percentile projection?
I want the good stuff, because we got pretty close to it last year.
So, okay. This legitimately rules. In Aaron Judge's 99th percentile Pecota projection, he hits 313, 436, 712, which is a 1.148 OPS. He was at 1.111 last year. By the way, slugging 712 is insane. He hit 63 home runs last year, 62 home runs last year, and he slugged 686, and they're saying that he's got more in the tank. Their home run number is always a little low because Pecota is built on comps, but they have him with 57 homers and 57 homers and 27 doubles. His DRC plus, which is their version of WRC plus, is 223, and he would be an 11.4 WAR player. So basically they're saying that 99th percentile Aaron Judge is 2022 Aaron Judge, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. His comps are weird because this model is weird. Wally Post, never heard of that guy. Dwight Evans and Sammy Sosa. I don't know. It would be a lot of fun if Aaron Judge hit 57 home runs and batted 313. But we've already seen him do that. It's just what happened last year.
Last year, that was crazy. I can't even fathom. Actually, can you see like past 99th percentile projections? Like,
yes.
What were his 99th percentile last year? Because I would love to see how close he came.
Yeah, I'm pulling that up. I know that he beat it. I have the April 2022 Pecota release. Okay. Aaron Judge, April 2022 Pecota release, and we'll compare it against what he actually did. So Aaron Judge's, come on, having some window management issues. bear with me. Aaron Judge's 2022 batting average was .311. His 99th percentile batting average, according to Pecota, .302. So he beat that. His on-base percentage was .425. His 99th percentile on-base percentage, according to Pecota, .403. His slugging percentage was .686. His 99th percentile slugging percentage was .635. So he beat that by a lot. They had him for 7.2 war in his 99th percentile. He's now only 0.5 off of that in his 50th percentile. His 99th percentile home run outcome was 47. They didn't project anyone above 54 in their 99th percentile, but he beat that pretty handily too. So that was pretty cool. It's the limitations of a like comparisons based system, because like there aren't comps for guys who go out and hit 62 home runs, really, at least with the profile of Aaron Judge. But it's pretty cool that he had a better than 99th percentile season by that standard.
That just made my day hearing that.
It's really good. It's really good. So Aaron Judge is my pick for MVP as well. I think I know who you're going to be picking for this next category. The Yankees Cy Young winner in 2023.
So I have to pick Gerrit Cole. Like, I am so high on Gerrit Cole's 2023 season. We talked about it a bit in our what were we excited for, but he did so much well last year. In fact, he did everything well, but just gave up a lot of home runs. And assuming some normalization of his home run rate reflected in like stats like his xFIP, then you're going to get a guy who is going to be one of the best pitchers in the league. And I think the thing that I always value most, and we've seen time and time again that not everyone has this, is durability. I mean, he's going to go out there and pitch every day, going to give you something close to 200 innings. And I think his floor is incredibly high and his ceiling is just beyond where I think most people perceive it to be. So it's, you know, the preseason lists of top players, I think I have seen him a lot higher than I expected, but you know, some lists, you know, MLB Network's list left him off the top 10 pitchers. I think that's a mistake. I think this guy is.
But you don't really concern yourself with these lists.
I don't concern myself with these lists. You know, sure. But yeah, I mean, Gerrit Cole is, in my opinion, Yankee Cy Young.
He's Gerrit Cole. He's really good in the list. Oh my gosh.
Is Gerrit Cole on the top 10 of most beautiful people?
Born in people. July 1975 list.
Only one man on that list.
Only
Alex
one
Rodriguez.
Man. He's part centaur.
Now that we're in the spring,
every centaur is part centaur.
My MVP of the winter moment was when we recapped the A-Rod Colin Cowherd conversation.
Oh, that was great.
The dark
chat
days
GPT
got us through.
Yeah, that was awesome. Okay. I agree. Gerrit Cole is going to have a phenomenal season. You know, his peripherals were better than what he actually achieved last year. I think the home run per fly ball should go down. His home runs versus expected home run stat was pretty, indicative of that. And with all that said, my pick for the Cy Young of the 2023 New York Yankees is Luis Severino.
Boo. Just kidding.
Oh, come on.
I know.
You can't boo Luis Severino. Okay.
I can't.
So here's the thing. Luis Severino has shown phenomenal stuff in camp. He's shown more swing and miss than we were seeing last year. He's shown strong velocity. He's shown a really good slider. He looked dominant his last time out. I think he's finally, knock on wood, appeared to be recovered from his injury. He finally had a normal offseason. He was electric last year when he was on the mound. He also has, his peripherals also indicate that he should do better this coming year than he did last year. His ground ball rate was higher than it was in 2018. And let's not forget, it's a contract year for Luis Severino. And my favorite position player on the Yankees just went into a contract year and had potentially the best, I mean, he had the best non-bond season since integration except for maybe tying like 1 or 2 years by Mickey Mantle. I don't know if I expect Luis Severino to like go out and be like late 90s, early 2000s Pedro, but I expect that Luis Severino is going to be a man on a mission this year, and I think we're going to see a version of Luis Severino that we have not seen since, you know, maybe the first half of 2018. I think this man is going to be off the charts good.
And we're not even talking about Carlos Rodon or Nestor Cortez. I wholeheartedly support that. I mean, this Yankees rotation is electric, and Luis Severino. Like, Gerrit Cole is the guy, but, like, Luis Severino and Carlos Rodon are, like, those dudes, you know?
Yeah.
Gerrit Cole is, like, he's leading the pack, but, like, I'm right there on the Luis Severino, Carlos Rodon, righty-lefty, like, hype factory combination.
They have the guy, and then they have three more guys who would be the guy if they were on, like, any other team. And that's
it's great.
Pretty sick.
And they have Clark Schmidt.
Who's your reliever of the year pick? I think this is one of the most interesting categories to me. I think there are a lot of ways you can go.
I agree. I think there are three legitimate ways you can go, and there could be four if you really like Wandy Peralta, which I do, but not enough to say he's going to be the best reliever. So I thought a lot about this, and in watching the Yankees last year, you know, Clay Holmes, incredible, you know, incredible first half, just even when he dropped off, he rebounded. Like, he's going to be fine. I'm not worried about Clay Holmes.
Yeah.
So excited to have Mike King back. I don't know this is where you went with this, but I'm so excited to have Mike King back. He is going to be he's going to be the most versatile guy. He's going to be able to come in whenever, give you innings. He's going to be what the Yankees were missing from that bullpen. But for the fireman role, for the eighth inning setup man, for the guy who I would trust for potentially the most fragile and most important situations, I think Jonathan Loaisiga is going to have a huge bounce back year, because he kind of already had a bounce back second half. So he came back from injury. He had a rough game against Cincinnati, which wasn't really that rough, if I remember correctly. I think it was just some weak contact and some poorly placed hits. But after that game, he pitched to a 1.76 ERA for the rest of the second half, held hitters to about a 200 average, a sub-500 OPS. And in the postseason, he was nails. I mean, I know a lot of the Yankees guys were nails, but I think Jonathan Loaisiga was the most impressive reliever in the postseason, just in terms of the stuff he was flashing and the situations he was getting out of. I think he is going to be the guy again, because, like, as I said, after he was injured, he already was the guy. His projections, you know, like moderate, like nothing that's going to blow you away, but I think he's going to blow his projections away. I'm really excited to have a healthy Loaisiga back and to just keep, you know, doing what he was doing at the end of last year. Like, let's not forget how good he was in 2021. I think he would have been most people's pick for this award going into last year.
I agree. It's Jonathan Loaisiga. And I think you described it. You described it correctly. The question that I treated this like I was considering with the reliever of the year pick is who do I trust to get the most important outs? You know, we're going to talk about who we expect to lead the team in saves. And that might have been, you know, a few years ago how we thought about who the most important reliever is, or, you know, the situation in which we'd like to see the best reliever. But to me, the pitcher who will be most effective at just getting outs in the situations in which he is charged to do so is going to be Jonathan Loaisiga. And I love his style of pitching. I love his stuff. I love that he's basically unhittable. I love that he breaks bats all the time. I could not be more excited for the season that I expect Jonathan Loaisiga to have. I think it's going to look a lot like 2021 did. I don't know that they'll get 70 innings out of him. I don't know that they'll have to. But I do expect that, you know, when a team's 2, 3, and 4 guys are coming up, Jonathan Loaisiga is going to be up in the bullpen, you know, getting ready to face those guys.
Dude, I love Loaisiga.
He's so great. He's so awesome. Great.
All right, for the next ones, why don't you go first, since I've been leading?
All right, you want to do Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, you got it.
So, look. I didn't want this to be too, like, cookie cutter of a of a situation. And there are a lot of guys with rookie eligibility who you can make a case are going to be really important and valuable to this team. So instead of worrying about any of those guys, I wish casted, as I am wont to do. And I gave the Rookie of the Year award to Davey Garcia. And I know that that sounds stupid, because Davey Garcia hasn't pitched effectively in Major League Baseball since 2020. He hasn't really pitched effectively as a professional very much since 2021, and the early part of it at that. But I see a role transition for Davey Garcia. I see some openings on this pitching staff developing. And I see an opportunity for a guy with a lot of moxie and really good stuff and a lot of velocity added to his fastball and, you know, one or one and a half good secondary pitches to come in and get some of the outs that we've been looking for guys to get. You know, I don't want there to be a huge burden on Michael King this year. I want Clark Schmidt to be able to earn a permanent spot in the starting rotation. I want the Yankees to be able to have guys in the bullpen who they can go to for multiple innings. And I think Davey could fit that role really well. Look, I can imagine it being a long shot. I know there are a lot of arms that the Yankees have and a lot of arms that they're excited about, but, I see Davey Garcia as a guy who could develop into a really valuable piece. We know how much I love, just like bullpen guys who are cool as hell, and he would absolutely fit that mold. And I just have had a soft spot for Davey Garcia forever, so I'd really like him to succeed, and it was going to be boring for me to pick Anthony Volpe for this award.
We didn't do bold predictions yet. Like, we're still on preseason prediction.
No, that's not bold.
I will be interested to see how this one ages, because you're either going to be a genius, as we know you are, but like proving a genius in other ways, or it's, you know, Davey Garcia is going to be out of the organization, because there's really only two ways this is going to go. I would love for you to be right, but I just have, like, I think there are guys who I can see potential in, and, you know, based on mediocre minor league numbers, but I think he needs to start with like just some decent pitching in the minors. I hope it happens. I do think your instinct is right that he needs to probably not be a starter and needs to start focusing on the bullpen, and I'd imagine that's what's going to happen, but I feel like this is still a few steps too far for me, just based on like how horrific his numbers have been. But I would love for it to happen. Like, him in 2020 was awesome. It's so sad that the last years have happened, and you know what is not unprecedented, because look at Dellin Betances. Like, different profile, but a completely busted minor league starter who reinvented himself and became one of the best relievers in baseball. So
the Yankees thought Jonathan Loaisiga was a starter.
Right. Like, I think Betances is more like what I was thinking of, just in terms of like he was awful with command in the minors.
Yeah,
but Loaisiga is the similar, you know, he was like an okay starter who's now a dominant reliever. Like, it happens all the time. And if it happened to Davey Garcia, it would not be even close to the most surprising conversion from starter to reliever that we've seen. So,
and it would also be sick as hell.
It would be sick. I'm going to go with Volpe just because I didn't really go that deep, and I just, you know, I'm going to go between the two guys who I think are going to get the most playing time as rookies and pick the
you
guy.
You probably
who
aren't
is better.
Wrong.
Right. Like, I'm more likely to be right. It's definitely less fun, but
yeah,
we've talked about Volpe. So impressive. What we've seen is just nothing short of big league ready. And if he doesn't start the majors, he's going to move up quickly. And yeah, nothing more to say about that. But man, if you were right and I was wrong, it would sure be something.
I hope we're both right.
I hope we are too. Co-rookies of the year, Davey Garcia and Anthony Volpe, hoisting the World Series trophy above their heads.
Exactly. Here's one where I think we're going to agree. Comeback player of the year, Giancarlo Stanton.
Yep.
He had a phenomenal first half last year. You know, had some injuries, struggled a bit in the second half. I expect like a, you know, 130, 135 WRC plus with about 35 homers and some better health and some better batted ball luck out of Giancarlo Stanton this year. I think that's all completely reasonable. Like, he is never going to post a 227 BABIP again. That's crazy. I expect a little bit of bounce back in his walk rate. You know, he used to run it at, like, you know, pretty high numbers, you know, between like 10 and 14. It's been 10 or 11 the last couple years. I think the batting average will be back. I think he'll hit something like, you know, 250, 330, 470. And, you know, and an 800 OPS from Giancarlo Stanton would be perfectly fine for this team with, you mm-hmm. know, 35 homers and whatever else he's going to contribute. Last year was a combination of bad luck, bad health, and he still hit 31 homers in 110 games. Like, Giancarlo Stanton is going to have a really good season. I'm very excited for it. And I'm interested to see if he contributes in the outfield. I think that would mm-hmm. be like a just a cool thing for him to do.
Yeah, I mean, his lowest BABIP before last year, it was in his MVP year, like just slightly under 290. So I think you're safe in saying there will be some regression to the mean, especially for somebody who hits the ball as hard as him. Yeah. Man, I would like probably the best moments of 2021 was when Judge and Stanton were just firing on all cylinders. I would love to see that happen again, because people who are knocking the offense forget that those two together like can create a good offense basically on their own. And
oh, totally.
Judge right now is probably better than he was in 2021, so it doesn't really take much for that to happen. So I 100% agree with all of that.
Love it. Breakout player is our next category. And you can tell me if this counts. I think it does, because this guy only has 12 games of major league experience. I like Greg Weissert in this category. I thought about making one of my bold predictions that the Yankees would trade for a starter and then turn Clark Schmidt into Michael King part two. But I don't think that needs to happen. And I want to leave a runway for Clark to cement himself in the rotation. I think Greg Weissert is going to become the guy who's in the style of Mike King. You know, in the minors, he was striking out almost like 12 or 13 per nine pretty consistently. That went down a little bit in the bigs. He's getting his command under control, and he just throws the crazy frisbee slider that looks sick and is unhittable. We know the Yankees are great at building up guys' velocities. If he can get the average fastball closer to 96 than 95 and keep throwing that slider, he's going to be, I think, basically, you know, unhittable. Maybe not unhittable, but pretty dang hard to hit, and would just be an incredible weapon for the Yankees to have coming out of the bullpen. I just feel like they're great at building this exact reliever in a lab, and they've done mm-hmm. it again with Weissert. And, you know, at whatever time that they let him loose on the league, I think he's going to make a really big difference.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I playing time obviously not going to be guaranteed right off the jump, but he's going to be in the bullpen. He's going to be one of the first call-ups, and his slider is awesome. Like, that, just the movement on it, great cameo last year. I'm all for it. Like, I have complete confidence in the way the Yankees develop these pitchers. So, you know, Greg Weissert or whoever the next guy is, like, I have total confidence that they're going to be dudes, and I would love to see this happen. The bullpen with Greg Weissert and Davey Garcia is quite a ways from where we are now, but like, if they're good, then I can't wait to see it.
My dream.
So my pick is going to be Harrison Bader. I talked about this a little bit on what I'm excited for this year, but Harrison Bader has a lot of untapped potential that I think we started to see in the postseason. But, you know, taking away the bat, his defense is just out of this world, and that's definitely a known quantity. But, you know, he's played in a pitcher-friendly park and away from Busch Stadium. He's hit tons better than he has at home. I think if he taps into any bit of that power that we've seen in the postseason, is able to be a consistent, maybe 20 home run hitter and put up, you know, a WRC plus that's above league average, something like the 110 WRC plus that he had in 2021. I think the reason I think he's a breakout is, you know, if he, there could be another level, you know, if he gets to like 120, it isn't that much of a stretch to say that he could be one of the most valuable center fielders if he can put the power that he's occasionally flashed, his stellar defense, and just some more consistent on-base ability and, you know, raising the batting average a little bit. I think all the tools are there. I think also a walk year for him, and also a guy who has great energy. Like, the Yankees low-key have a lot of good vibes, guys, and it's going to be great to see him once he gets back. It doesn't sound like it's going to be super long of an absence, but I think he's being overlooked as one of the guys who can really be a difference maker on both sides of the ball. Maybe not being overlooked in the field, but definitely on offense. I think in the bottom of the order, like, he shouldn't be batting leadoff like he had to at some points in the postseason. But if you slot him in the bottom of the order, he could be a real difference maker for some, you know, lower in the lineup rallies.
Absolutely. If he hits, there's basically like nothing this team can't achieve. A 120 WRC plus Harrison Bader would be like 2010 Brett Gardner levels of valuable. Like, that's a 6 or 7 WAR guy potentially, you know, given enough playing time. All right, let's rapid fire the stat leaders. Home runs, runs batted in, batting average, OPS, and WAR. Do you have Judge for all of them?
Yes.
Same. Wins, do you have Gerrit Cole?
I picked Nestor, and that's mostly okay, because I think wins are very random, and it's never who you think it is. Like, Gerrit Cole could be really good, not get a lot of wins. So maybe this is me just like being like, screw it, wins don't really matter anymore. It's not because I think Nestor's going to be the best pitcher.
Yeah, I just think Cole's going to make the most starts. ERA, I have Carlos Rodon.
I have Cole for ERA.
Okay, I like that. Saves, I have Clay Holmes.
I have Clay Holmes, too.
I think there's a lot of noise about the Yankees doing like a closer by committee thing, and I don't think they're interested in that. I don't think they ever have been, mm-hmm. and I don't think Clay Holmes is the guy they're going to go to for the highest leverage plate appearances, so I think you just let him slot into the closer role. He'll be extremely good at it, but I don't think they're going to rotate that around. Shall we get into bold predictions?
Let's do it.
Okay, my first bold prediction is one that we already kind of covered, so we don't have to do a ton of discussion of it. I have Anthony Volpe will play a significant portion of the season, but he will play the majority of his games away from shortstop. I think it sounds like you agree.
Yes, I 100%.
Let's hear your first one.
Kind of already related to what we've done. I think Gerrit Cole is going to win the AL Cy Young Award and have the most WAR of any pitcher in the league.
That would be pretty good. My second bold prediction, and like, there's not a lot of discourse about this, but
hold on 1 second. I also, an aside related bet, I might have made the Cole DeGrom bet for another year.
Oh, God.
So I love it. I got financial stakes on this one, too, people.
I love it. So people may not realize how bold this actually is until they look at this guy's projections. I think Nestor Cortez is going to be basically as good in 2023 as he was in 2022. There are a lot of projections that think he's like a 3.7 to 3.9 ERA guy, and I think he's low threes at worst. I think the league, like, I keep waiting for the league to figure out Nestor Cortez, and they keep not doing it. You know, in his last 250 innings, he has a 2.61 ERA. Like, at some point, that's not an accident. And I don't think it's an accident. I think Nestor is going to continue to be extremely good in 2023.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that the projections have definitely undersold him for years now, but like, we know what he is, and he's still out there, you know, pitching against the Cardinals, pitched really well. Like, I'm not concerned about Nestor. Some guys just always outperform the projections. Like, that's more of an indicator if you're a consistent outperformer of projections than I think using the projections themselves are. So I really like that one.
What's your second?
Okay, so my second also relates to the pitching staff. Big Clark Schmidt year ahead. I am predicting that he's going to be no worse than, by WAR, than the third most valuable pitcher on the Yankees rotation.
So you have Clark Schmidt as more valuable than...
So...
Like, you have Gerrit Cole,
All I'm saying
is either, yes, Luis Severino, Carlos Rodon, or Nestor Cortez, and then you have Clark Schmidt.
Yes, because I think...
Interesting.
Well, I don't know who what the exact order is. I think that between load management, between IL stints, I think the Yankees are going to pitch Schmidt. They're going to handle Schmidt differently than the other ones. Yep. I just don't think they're going to limit his innings in the way that they might be more concerned about. Severino, Cortez, Rodon, I think he's going to be out there consistently. I do think that he's going to prove enough to keep the fifth spot when Rodon comes back. And you know what? Like, somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to underperform. I'm just playing the odds here. I think that, you know, he's going to be better than somebody, even though I don't know who that is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Clark Schmidt threw like 90 innings last year and like way fewer than that in 2021. I'd be surprised if Clark Schmidt pitches enough for that. And I don't know necessarily what it would mean for the rest of the pitching staff for that to come true, but Clark Schmidt being very valuable would be a good thing. My last pitching prediction, I have Luis Severino starting the All-Star game.
Yeah, I love it.
I think he's going to come out of the gate really strong, a la 2018. I loved what I saw from him down the stretch last year. I loved what I saw from him in his last spring training start. I generally love him. I have him winning the team Cy Young Award. I have Luis Severino at like 11-2 with a 2.5 ERA or something by the time the All-Star game comes around. I think he's going to go crazy.
Big Luis Severino year coming up. I'll say Luis Severino is the number two pitcher on that Schmidt prediction.
Okay, there we go. What's your third prediction?
So my third prediction is kind of a more sad one. I think that one of Josh Donaldson and Aaron Hicks will be seeing significant playing time into the end of the season. I think it's more likely to be Hicks, but I just feel like this constant desire to have them traded to assure that they're not going to be playing, something's going to go wrong. Something's going to happen where maybe it's good. Maybe one of them is doing better than we think. Kind of one of them actually will relate to my next prediction, but I just think, you know what, I'm going to play the odds. I'm going to say it's probably likely that one of these two guys is going to be, you know, in late season lineup configurations. I know people are so confident that this is going to be a different team by the deadline, but, you know, I don't think you can bank on that.
Well, that will be an interesting one to watch. One that I thought was bold, but that we apparently agree on Halloween, Gleyber Torres will still be a New York Yankee. And I'm not talking about his costume. I think he will still be on the 26-man roster of the New York Yankees on Halloween 2023.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he is. Maybe he gets traded at the deadline. Like, I think it's malpractice for them to trade him right now. I could see something at the deadline, but I hope he has good enough of a year to just completely eliminate those doubts. It sucks that we keep having to do this, you know, him needing to prove he needs to be on this team. The guy would sign a massive contract extension right now. So
yeah,
maybe they should take a hint. But yeah, I agree with that more than I think you perceive that I did.
Prediction number four from you.
So this one is, I think the Yankees are going to throw the first no-hitter at Yankee Stadium since 1999. We've seen a Yankees no-hitter on the road, but I think this is the year that, you know, something happens in the Bronx. I'm not going to say who it is because I think they have multiple guys capable of doing so, but
definitely.
I think they came very close on multiple occasions last year, and yeah. I think this is the year that one of them breaks through and the home crowd sees a post-David Cohn perfect game no-hitter from their home team. I'm sorry, I should reframe this. A no-hitter thrown by the Yankees, because we obviously saw the Astros one.
Yes.
So maybe I should say a single pitcher no-hitter as well, because there's fake no-hitters.
That's a great point. My final bold prediction, and I think this is actually bolder than people are going to give it credit for, much like the Nestor one. The Yankees have not had a player play multiple games. The Yankees have not had a player start multiple games at every infield spot and every outfield spot in the integration era. It hasn't happened. The only Yankee in the integration era to play multiple games, to appear in multiple games at every infield spot and every outfield spot in the same season, was Clay Bellinger in 2000, Hoodie Allen's favorite player. I predict that Oswaldo Cabrera will start multiple games at every infield spot and every outfield spot this year.
I like it. I completely agree. I think he, the way it's set up is for him to, you know, basically play all over, and definitely more unprecedented than I think I realized before you said that. But I think it's, yeah, I'm not sure, like, I'm not sure what would stop that from happening given just the lineup flux right now in the outfield.
I think it would be them not wanting to play him at center field, or there not being an avenue to start him at first base, but I think it's all going to happen.
I just think those avenues exist, so we'll see.
All right, your final bold prediction before we wrap up here.
So, as we talked about last time, some new rules coming into baseball that incentivize stolen bases, and I think they're going to be up around the league this year. I think the Yankees also have guys who can hit a few home runs, so we have seen, you know, we've seen some guys go 20-20, hit 20 home runs, steal 20 bases. I think the Yankees are going to have three of them. I guess in my mind, I think Harrison Bader is going to be one of them. That's, I guess, my, you know, going along with the breakout pick. I think
that's very bold.
I think that Oswaldo Cabrera could be one. I think that even Gleyber Torres could be one. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I think
Gleyber
is probably the safest of those.
I don't know. I mean, even Aaron Hicks could be one if he gets his power back. I mean, he said he was going to be a 30-30 guy. So maybe we could scale it back a bit. But the point is, there, I think there are multiple guys. Oh, Anthony Volpe, that's the other guy I meant to talk about, who went 20-50.
Just to be clear, Harrison Bader has never hit 20 home runs or stolen 20 bases.
I think there's a big power uptick for Harrison Bader coming.
That could be. That could be.
Anthony Volpe was actually the guy I had in mind when I thought of this, because first 20-50 guy in the minors since Andrew Jones. So if he gets consistent playing time, it really doesn't take, you know, that much of a stretch of the mind to see how this happens. But the point is, there are a few guys who I think could do it. I think they're going to have, we're going to have three of them. I mean, you know, even IK, no, I'm just kidding.
All right, Whipple, we're going to wrap up here because I have to edit this podcast and it's long now. I'm going to give you just a couple over unders that I think are interesting. WRC plus DJ LeMahieu over under 116, which was his full season number from last year.
I mean, I think over, just based on how he hit in the first half and how that got tanked by that injury.
Gleyber over under 115, which is where he was last year.
I think over. I really think that his true talent is better than that. He also got tanked by a pretty poor August, so we'll see.
Josh Donaldson over under 97.
I say over, but I don't think by much.
Domingo Germán over under a 3.61 ERA.
I say over. I think he's going to be in his usual low fours, even though the stuff looks better. You know, I don't know if that's going to translate.
Domingo Germán over under 72.1 innings pitched.
Definitely over. I mean, there will be innings to pitch, and he's always been one of the guys who gets those spare innings.
Clay Holmes over under 20 saves.
I say over. I know it wasn't over by that much last year, but I just
it was
feel
20
like
last year.
It was 20, exactly. So I think there will be more saves for him. That is a closer from the jump.
All right. I love your optimism. Whipple.
Did I say over for all of them?
You did say over for all of them, but there was one time where over was a bad thing, but
yeah,
we'll give you a pass.
Fair.
I think it's time for us to wrap up here. The next time that we record a podcast, the Yankees will have played some regular season baseball. I can't wait. It's been far too long. I'm so excited for this season. I know things aren't going exactly as people planned or suspected. I know that there's still, you know, a cloud of uncertainty surrounding this roster. I know that nobody really knows, you know, why Brian Cashman made the Frankie Montas trade, and that's somehow back in the news, and Carlos Rodon is hurt, but there's some optimism there. I don't care. At the end of the day, the Yankees are projected to be one of, if not the best team in baseball. I think they're the best team in baseball. I think they have a lot of guys who are primed to have better seasons than they did last year. I think the cavalry is coming from the kids, the reinforcements that they're bringing up. And there's just so much to be excited about for this team. And when Gerrit Cole takes the mound against the Giants in less than a week now, it's just going to be electric, as always. Any parting shots from you before we wrap up here?
One guy who I think you should be more excited about, a guy who represented our great country, learned from, in his words, Ken Griffey Jr.,
no,
Mike Trout.
Don't do this.
And just hit, a three-run homer tonight, demonstrating his newfound bat-to-ball slugging abilities. He's back for another season. It's America's third catcher. I keep following him across the country. I can't wait to see him play this year. Kyle Higashioka, everyone, back for another season somehow.
All right, and you guys have just listened to the last Yankees Files podcast, and I'm joking. Look, you know what? If the Yankees play well, I don't care who it is on the Yankees that's playing well.
It just has to be Luis
Gary
Severino.
Sanchez. As long as it's Luis Severino.
There you go. Good note to end on.
All right, Whipple, enjoyed it as always. For our listeners, you can find us at YankeesFiles.com. We are on Twitter, where we're at YankeesFiles. The podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. We hope that you'll rate, review, and subscribe. But if you don't like the podcast, only subscribe. Don't rate and review, because we don't want you to say bad things about us. And, man, I'm just so excited for the baseball season. We'll be back to recap probably the first series of the year the next time you hear from us. And until then, let's go Yankees.